Okay. So, I want to start from Parakeh again, the beginning of Parakeh. We did the first classic, I think, just to do it again, maybe. Add to what we already said. Vayhi bayom hashlishi was on the third day of the fast. Vatilbash Esther Malchus, she donned the Malchus kingship, which we said the Pashup Shat was probably the clothing of kingly royal clothing, but Chazal say it means she donned Ruach HaKodesh. Vatamoy b'chatzar beis hamelech ha'pnimis, and she stood in the inner courtyard of the beis hamelech. Noichach beis hamelech, opposite the house of the king, of where he was sitting. V'hamelech yoshev al kisei malchusoi v'beis hamalchus, and the melech was sitting on his throne in the beis hamalchus. Noichach pesach habayis, opposite the pesach habayis. So some of the mafarshim say that this was actually out of the ordinary. The throne was not usually situated directly across from the opposite the door, and that's why the pasuk is emphasizing that, and that was part of the nes, that in order that he should see her right away. And we said bear with me 1 second, bear with me here. We said that we quoted the we brought down the Chazal that say that they bring the pasuk the Tehillim, the capital Tehillim, which Lamnatzeach al Yelas Hashachar, which is attributed to Esther. But it's David HaMelech said it first, but Esther, it's about Esther, and Esther said it.
Which number is
it? I don't remember. Is it?
22.
That she said, Hoshieini, first she called him, the Chazal said, first she called him, Hatzila Mecherb Nafshi Miyad Kelev Yechidosi. Save me, she davened to Hashem when she was going into Achshverosh, save me from the Kelev, save my soul from the Kelev, from the dog. And Chazal said that was a taina on her, that she shouldn't have called him a Kelev. And then she said, okay, so then she Chazor V'Amra, she said, Hoshieini Mipi Aryeh. Then she kind of retracted and she said, no, save me from the mouth of the lion. She called him a lion. So what was that? What was going on over there? So you could learn that it means that it was kind of a tie on her that she called him a kelev, which was like a zilzal. It was degrading to the melech. It wasn't proper honor, proper respect for the melech, even though he was a rasha, but you still have to record him respect. So she shouldn't have called him a kelev, even in her tefillah, even in her private tefillah, she shouldn't have called him a kelev. We know that I think I mentioned that Eliyahu ran for all these miles in front of Achav, who was one of the greatest Rishayim, and yet he accorded him all that honor because he was a king. So there is a din that you have to kavod hamelech, that you have to respect, you have to show respect for a king, even if the person is a rasha. So then she called him an Aryeh, which is more respectful. Alternative pshat is that is a more of a drush, is that she had made a mistake. She had thought, well, I don't know if it was a mistake, but she had thought the whole time that why is this gezeira? Why was it a decree? Why was there a decree on Klal Yisrael to be killed? What did they do to deserve it? So she had thought, she was under the impression that it was because Nenu Misudas Achashverosh. They went to the Suda of Achashverosh and they perhaps engaged in Dvar Masurim, in eating Machal Masurim, eating Trefos, Nevelos, eating non-kosher things. And generally being involved in that hedonistic kind of thing. So that's what she told him to fast. That's why she told him to fast, is to be a kapara for that. So that's what she said, Hatzila mikelev yechidasi. Save me from a kelev. She called him a kelev. She was referring to the chet. The avera is a kelev, is a dog. Al shame that we know that a dog is what we say like kelev. Tashlichnu said when you have an avela or trefa, you throw it to a dog. So that's why she called it a dog because she was referring to the chet, which was an avela, trefa, eat dvar masurim. That they ate dvar masurim. It was an achila. The chet had to do with their eating. And then she saw that...
Oh, so she wasn't referring to him as a dog, but it was like their sinners?
Right, I think so. Right. And then she, and then what she said, well, and then when she saw that the Shekhinah, I forgot to mention that, but that was the main thing that happened. The Shekhinah was mistalekas from her. She had come in with the Shekhinah, the Malchus, the Ruach HaKodesh, and then it had left her. When she came to the Beis HaTzlamim, when she reached the house where the place and the palace where there was the all the idols, she her Shekhinah went away from her. And she said, Shema ata don al shogi kemezid, Hashem, are you don shogi kemezid? Or do you judge someone who is unintentional like they're intentional? And she said, and that's what she called him an Aryeh. Hashi ain't mipi Aryeh. Why? Because there was another chet, if you recall, previously, that had happened before, which was in the time of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar had ordered Klal Yisrael to bow down to a tzelem, to bow down to an idol, and they had done it, they had complied, even though it was out of fear, it wasn't really Avodah Zarah, but it had, they had shown, they had made a presentation as if they were worshiping Avodah Zarah, which was a terrible taina on them. So that's what she said. Nebuchadnezzar is likened to an Ari, I think in the Neil. He's compared to a lion. So that's what she said. When she reached the Beis HaTzlam in the house of the Avodah Zarah, she realized the chet that the decree came upon was not for eating at Achshverosh Estuda. It was because of the Beis HaTzlam. It was because they had worshipped, they had bowed down to Avodah Zarah many, many years before, and Nebuchadnezzar, under Nebuchadnezzar. And that's why she felt, that's why probably when I reached the place of the idols, that's why my Shekhinah left me, my help from Hashem is leaving me, because this is the chet that the decree is about, is the worship of Avodah Zarah. So that's what she said, Hashi ain't mipi Aryeh, and then she davened, save me from the Aryeh. The Aryeh referring to Nebuchadnezzar, that chet. What was she saying, Shema to don al shogi kemezid? Hashem, do we deserve this? Why is my Shekhinah going away from me? Are you done shogeg kemezid? Are you judging a shogeg unintentional kemezid as if it's intentional? So what you're referring to? She could be referring to bowing down to the Avodah Zarah in times of Nebuchadnezzar. That's considered shogeg, even though they did it intentionally, but it was by force. So that's like
they were pretending to.
They're pretending to. So even though they did it knowingly, that she's calling shogeg because it's not really, it's not willful. So Hashem, do they deserve this because they bowed down to that idol? It was like shogeg. So are you judging shogeg like mezid? That's one option. Another option is through the Sachashverish. Are you the shogeg? The averus they may have done, they may have engaged in it through the Sachashverish were b'shogeg. They went just eat. They didn't know that they were being over on averus. That they were transgressing averus.
Were they taught by what's his name? By Mordechai not to go, or he was against their going, but did he actually tell them not to go?
I think he did tell him, yeah.
Okay, so they didn't listen to him.
But that was more of the Rabbanon. Right. That was, that actually the Beis HaLevi says that's kind of the whole chet of, that the whole Purim story revolves around the importance of the Rabbanon's, for that reason. But another option over here is that what is she doing now? She's going in to Achashverosh, and she knows, most likely, she's going to have relations with him. And that is the only reason, and she's going willfully, the first time ever that she's going willfully, that she wasn't summoned. So Mordechai had told her that it's okay, it's permitted because it's for the sake of saving Klal Yisrael, right? But she's worried, maybe he's wrong, maybe he's making a mistake. She's very worried about that. Maybe he's making a mistake in his psak, and I'm doing some terrible avera. So she's saying, maybe that's why the Shekhinah is leaving me. Are you done shogeg kemezid? Are you done his shogeg, his mistake, that he may be possibly making a mistake in his psak? Are you being done that kemezid?
Wow.
Okay.
What would be the problem from the Siddur? After all, we've learned that the kosher food was provided, so there's a problem just stop eating together with our own.
I'm sorry. So
wasn't it the
Kalim? I never heard of that.
So there was a different man. The Mikdash.
Oh, that's just the Kalim of the
Semitah. He was wearing the Begatim Kahuna too.
Oh, I don't know if they were doing that. That's possible. I never heard that.
Apparently, that's what he served on.
Yeah.
Kalim and Kalim Shem used the clay based Semitah. I don't know if that means that they were using it. Meila, possibly. There is just the issue of the Rabbanan, like we said. That they weren't listening to Mordechai. It's possible that they were, just it looks bad. It's like Maris Ayin type of thing.
It was hedonistic theory. Everyone was getting
drunk. Right. There's the kind of mussar aspect, the moral aspect.
Immorality in there.
Right. It wasn't a nice atmosphere. But what you said, that the Nevelos Treif is apparently, maybe it's not so clear in Chazal, maybe there are differing opinions whether actually kosher food was served. Appears that that might be actually not unanimous.
I saw something, and I think it was in Megillah, in the Gemara, it said that Mordecai, it was a God attempt, but it said Mordecai was born in the wine.
Right.
I have no idea what that means. Why was he there in the first
place? What was he doing there? Right.
Making sure that he would drink mint.
Right. There are many opinions about what happened. But in Megillah, you go through that, because there's so many opinions in the Gemara itself, because the Gemara talks extensively about the story of Burma, also all the Mefarshim have different takes, all the Midrashim have different takes. So, yeah. Okay. Let's say the puzzle base. Vayhi kirois hamelech es Esther hamalka. It was when the king saw Esther hamalka, emedes bechatzer, standing in the chatzer, which we already said that she was in the chatzer. Nasachim be'inov. She found favor in his eyes. Actually, notice that it doesn't say matzachim be'inov. She found, which it usually says natzachim be'inov, which is almost a lashon. Almost sounds like she carried the chaim. She bore the chaim be'inov. This actually leads to the Chazal to say that it was a nes, that a malach came and mashach chut shel chesed, gave her grace, gave her chaim. It wasn't a natural chaim. Vayoshet hamelech la'esther shavit hazohav asher b'yodoy, and the melech stretched out his shavit hazohav, his golden scepter, which was in his hand. Asher b'yodoy, where else would it be if not in his hand?
Well, you already have the lashon of
Right, so that also some Farshim say it was an unnatural grace. So here it says Asher B'yodeh, the Shavit Hazav, which was in his hand, which sounds superfluous. Of course, it's in his hand. Some Farshim say Yosef Lekach says that it's coming to point out that it wasn't usually in his hand, that it was a mace. Even though we usually think of the scepter as kind of something the king holds always, as just our notion, but the Yosef Lekach assumes that wasn't necessarily the case, and maybe Kobe just held the scepter. It was more like a cane or like a supportive stick, which he would only carry, when he was walking or something or leaning, not when he was just sitting on his throne. So that was kind of a nice that it happened to be in his hand. Vatikrav Esther vatiga b'rosh hasharbit, and Esther drew near and she touched the rosh hasharbit, the head of the end of the scepter. So let's just first. Ask a question. Why does it say Emedes bechatzer? He saw her standing in the chatzer. If the previous pasuk already told us where she was standing, right? The pasuk alaf said about Tamoi bechatzer bechatzar b'samel chafimis. So obviously that's where he saw her.
He's in the throne room.
He's in
the courtyard. Necessarily easy to see someone in the courtyard.
You're saying it's emphasizing the fact that he saw her even though she wasn't in the throne room.
So.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Although we did say that it was opposite, the throne room was opposite the door.
Right.
And she was standing opposite the door. So one shot, which is maybe a simple shot, is that it's coming to emphasize it's coming to explain why he was so moved by her. And it was because he saw that she put herself in sakana, she put herself in danger by coming to him, right, in the Chatzar Beis HaMelech HaPnimis. The danger was that she came to him, that she approached him so near in the chatzar, in the courtyard, right before his throne room. So even though, yes, it's true, we know already where she was standing, but it's coming to emphasize that he was so moved, it's come to like bring out the emotional aspect. Why was he so moved? Because he saw that she had come, she had risked her life to come and stand before him in the courtyard. The Yosef Lekach says an interesting shot, that really she had two, we know she was worried about two things. First of all, about the receipt. Finding favor in Achashverosh's eyes. She wanted to find that favor in Achashverosh's eyes in order that he should listen to her. He should grant her request. Second, she didn't want to find favor in his eyes in order that she shouldn't have to have relations with him. So that's her two personal. One was a worry for herself and for Klal Yisrael that they should her request should be granted. The other was just a personal request that she shouldn't have to be over in Isser. So how would these seem paradoxical? How would they both be able to be in his kayin? So usually we say, the Chazal seem to say that no, it's not true. She did end up having relations with him, and that was her sacrifice she made. But the Yosef Lekach seems to say that it wasn't necessarily so, and really, she only found favor in his eyes when she was standing in the chatzar. And that's why it emphasizes that. When he saw her standing in the chatzar, nasachim einav, then she found favor in his eyes. She was in front of him, she was a little somewhat distant from him, still in the chatzar Beis HaMelech, in the courtyard. He saw her, all of a sudden she had this grace, this incredible chen, unnatural chen, and it moved him. But then, as she drew nearer, he saw her. What had she been doing? She had been fasting for 3 days. She hadn't eaten or drinking for 3 days. She looks terrible. So when she draws near, he sees, oh my gosh, she looks sick. She looks like she's about to pass out. So he lost all his desire for her, and instead he became very solicitous about her. And as we'll see in the next pasuk, he says, Malach Esther, what is to you? Meaning, what is bothering you? What is ailing you? Not just what are you asking, what do you want to ask me, but what is ailing you, what is causing you this distress. Okay.
So is it possible that standing in the courtyard indicates dispute? She didn't walk all,
I mean, she didn't walk all the way into him.
Her life was saved before she
walked up. Interesting. You're saying that she was doing the littlest, as least as possible, proactively to be. And that's an interesting point. Interesting idea.
The comment here says that the king ran to her. He didn't call her into the throne room. He ran out to the courtyard.
Really?
Yeah. It says here. It's from the Midrash. It says. Start from the beginning. It says. When he noticed that they're standing in front of him, he was furiously angry because she had broken his law by coming before him without being called. Esther grew frightened. But the Almighty gave her grace in the king's eyes and invested her with new beauty and new charm. The king then rose from his throne, ran to Esther, and embraced her. Quote, Esther, my queen, he said, why do you tremble? This law does not apply to you. You are my beloved, my companion. He also said to her, when I saw you, why did you not speak to me? Your majesty, replied Esther, when I beheld you, I was overcome by your high dignity. So she didn't go inside, he came out to her.
So she's an honest, if that's the case, she's an honest.
Right, the actual going in was the first step, was not the honest, right. But I guess, like you're saying, she did the very, very least that she had to do. Just the bare minimum that she had to do. Okay, and what was the Indian of her coming near and touching the Reish HaSharvit? So that was... the Maharal explains that it's kind of the scepter is a symbol of kingship, and when she's coming, and the kingship when the king stretched out his scepter, is granting life where there is death, where really the person is Chayim Misa, he's able to almost be the Chayim Mason, almost to give life again, to revive, and that's what's symbolized by stretching out of the scepter. When she touches it, she's showing, I appreciate it, this is what I want, this is what I'm asking. When she doesn't touch it, it's kind of like she's showing I don't really care. When she comes near and she touches the Reish HaSharvit, she's showing her appreciation and showing that this is really something that she needs. Okay. Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer lo hamelech maloch Esther hamalko. And the king said to her, what is it to you? What is to you, Esther hamalko? Umava koshosich. And what is your request? Ad chatzi hamalchus v'yinosein loch. Until half of the malchus, and it will be given to you. Malach Esther, we said again, it could mean what is your request, but it could also mean Malach Esther, what is it ailing you? What is distressing you? Until half of the kingdom. So why would he only offer half of the kingdom? Because he's not going to give her more than himself, right? We know even let's say in the mitzvah of Ahavta L'Recha Kamoicha, love your fellow man as yourself, you don't have to love him more than yourself. So you don't have to give him more than what you have, right? So if he gives more than half, then he's giving her more, he's making her better than him. He's giving more.
This is reminiscent of and she comes from Yosef, because when the Pharaoh says to Yosef, you have everything except in my
king,
power,
right.
You know, in other words, Yosef was really king of Egypt, except the king, you know, the Pharaoh doesn't want to give everything,
right.
Because then he's no longer.
Right.
But he did the same thing, right?
So he's saying that he retains he's keeping the malchus to himself.
The Pharaoh, yeah, it's him, the Pharaoh.
So he's saying, I'm willing to give everything but my crown.
Exactly.
Right.
Otherwise, I don't have anything.
He didn't mean to give it to her for keeps.
What, the Chatzi HaMalchus?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
And go ahead and they'll give us stuff to keep.
Well, he didn't know she was Jewish. He didn't know she was Jewish yet. And I don't know, apparently he has this unbelievable love for her, which is kind of this unnatural love for her. You know, there's a famous Chazal that says, what does it mean, Ad Chatzi HaMalchus V'Nasei Lach, until half the kingdom? Until something which splits my kingdom in half. I will grant you anything up until something which splits my kingdom in half, which is rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. That's what his intention was over here, between the lines. Don't ask me for something which will split my kingdom. I will not grant you that, the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Which seems interesting, odd.
Yeah, because then it means he knows he's Jewish.
Yeah, he knows he's Jewish. Why would he?
That's not the fucking Midrash.
No, this is a Midrash. This is a Midrash.
Pashmashad is that he's offering her
at
Chasiyah
Malchus. Yeah, sure.
He's not offering her at Chasiyah Malchus. Something which was the kingdom to be divided.
I'm sorry, what?
It's saying that he's not offering the Pashmashad, he is offering.
Oh, that's it. Right.
This is saying that he's not offering. You're not offering.
You're saying the Medrash seems to contradict what is. I guess the point. I don't know, I'm not sure.
Ad can mean up to that point.
Ad loya b'chal, ad v'ad b'chal.
Is that clear?
Well, it could be that she can't request something that will disrupt his kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in the Midrash, they're adding, like, you know, asking for the building, you know, their opinion, not the king saying you can't ask for the rebuilding of the temple, but the Midrashim is saying, hey, rebuilding of the temple would be something that would.
Right, but he's asking that the pasuk seems to be saying, "I will grant you anything up until half of my malchus," meaning including up until and including half of my malchus, which would split his malchus. And the Medrash seems to be saying up until and not including, meaning not something. So that, like you're saying, ad, the word ad could mean different things. We have in the whole sugya and brachos, but ad loy ad b'chal, ad ad b'chal. But that's a good point. But why would he think that she's asking that she wants to, what that she might want to ask about the Beis HaMikdash if he doesn't know she's Jewish?
I think obsession. Like his one goal in life is to make sure that doesn't get built, because that would he sees like a vicious anti-Semite, so he doesn't want to see that happen. That would threaten.
Oh, so he's just always seeing red. He's always
he's got 127 kingdoms, and if the Beis HaMikdash were built, he would lose his power. So he can't trust anybody. Even if
they
think she's a
goy,
he can't trust her on that level.
Maybe. I mean, actually, Chazal, the Targum brings down that the reason that he was so intent on not building Beis HaMikdash was because he had made an alliance with some people, he had made an agreement with some people, and some people high up in the kingdom who didn't want to, or intent not to do it. It didn't sound like it was coming from him himself. But there's a kind of a pshat of the drush, which is that Chazal said that there was three nisim that happened for her when she went in. Three miracles that happened to her. First of all, she, even though she looked terrible, says her face was green, that's what I'll say, Mayrikos, from the fast for 3 days, she had chen. She didn't have strength to lift her head even, and a malach came and lifted her and stretched and said, supported her neck. Higbiya tzavar, he lifted her neck. The second one was that he gave her chayim, the malach gave her chayim, and the third one was that the shayar b'tazahav stretched out. It became extended. So these three things Achashverosh saw, and he thought that these are all a remez to the Beis HaMikdash. These are all a remez to the Beis HaMikdash. The shayar b'tazahav stretching out, that shows that something has something to do with the kingship. That her request has something to do with the kingship, will affect the kingship somehow. And that would be the Beis HaMikdash, like he says, Achatzei HaMalchus, that would split the kingdom. And we know the Beis HaMikdash is called the neck. How do we know that? Which the Chazal say, Lama Nimshal Beis HaMikdash to the neck, to the tzavar. You know, when Yosef cried on Binyamin's neck, and Binyamin cried on Yosef's neck, it says, really they were crying for the Beis HaMikdash, the Tubat HaMikdash, which would be destroyed in Binyamin, and the Mishkan of Shiloh, which would be destroyed in Yosef's chelik. So it's called the neck for two reasons. First of all, that it is, the Beis HaMikdash is just like the neck is at the top of the body, so the Beis HaMikdash is at the high point in Eretz Yisrael. Because I'll say that the Har Maria is one of the highest points. And also because it, just like the neck is where most of the jewelry are hanging from the neck, so too most of our beauties or our tachshitin, as it were, our chain, are dependent in the Beis HaMikdash, Kohuna and Leviya. Kohuna and Leviya are these kind of tachshitin that are, so to speak, hanging, as it were, from the neck, which is the Beis HaMikdash. So he saw three things happen for her. Shavat Hazav stretched out, must have had something to do with the Malchus, affect the Malchus. Her neck was raised by the Malach. Neck is a remnant to Beis HaMikdash. Her chain, she was given chain is also a remnant to Beis HaMikdash because the Roy Tachshitin are telling her. So he thought maybe she wants to, she attached to Beis HaMikdash. It's Al Derech Drush, obviously.
Apostle can share it here. When we don't know,
we have Sabor, right?
Al
Sabor. Al let's go tighter. Batoimer Esther im al hamelach toiv. And Esther said, if it is good by the king, kind of the king is willing, Yavai hamelach v'haman hayoim, let the king and Haman come today el hamishta asher sisiloi, to the mishta, the feast, which I have made for him. Let's just see the next possible. We're going to get to explain why she's doing this. Vayomer hamelach, maharu es Haman. The king said, hurry, Haman. Last is Devar Esther, in order to do the word of Esther, to fulfill the word of Esther. Vayavoy hamelach v'Haman al hamishta asher asas al Esther. And the Melech and Haman came to the feast which Esther made. Okay, so a lot of obviously fundamental questions. So why is she inviting? Why she had the chance? She had put herself in danger. She had the chance to ask for the repeal of the gzeira. She's asking for a feast. Seems to make no sense. And obviously, the big question: why is she inviting Haman? Why of all people is she inviting Haman? So both these questions are dealt with in the Gemara, and extensively in the Mefarshim. So, let's see how to do this. Let's just say the pshat, simple pshat. What is she saying? The Megra says, one pshat is that she's saying, I have something that is so dachuf, it's so important to me, and of such distressing nature, and so urgent, that I can't even speak about it now, because I'm afraid that you're not going to listen. That's what, basically what she's saying to the king. I've risked my life, I fasted 3 days, I risked my life to come in here, but it's so urgent, so pressing, and I'm afraid that you're not going to grant it to me, that I'm going to make a feast. Come to that feast, and when you're at a feast, when you're drinking wine, you'll be more in an accepting and willing state of mind, then I'm going to ask you, and maybe you'll be more willing to grant my request. So that's what she's saying then.
Well, he likes, I mean, they have his background. He likes drinking.
And he likes drinking, right.
He likes being more relaxed.
Right.
It's a part of me.
Right, he's a partier, and so that's what she's saying. Maybe in the setting of a feast, it'll be more, Maybe she's hungry.
And she doesn't want to be alone with the king.
That's why she's inviting Haman.
Well, she does. These are facts on the table. She's hungry. She fasted for 3 days.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't want to be alone with the king.
Oh, I see.
What will happen?
I see.
This This fits with that.
Interesting. You know, I never even thought of that.
But that Haman is a Rosh Hashanah. Haman is a chaperone.
A very interesting idea. So there's many explanations. Why, first of all, why she pushed it off to ask for a feast, and second, why she invited Haman. We don't have time to go through all of them. I have like 10 reasons, and I'm just going to say one which struck me. Next time we'll maybe go into more depth. One reason which struck me as very interesting, which is that from Reb Chaim Kanievsky, which is that she was worried that maybe the king would not be willing to repeal it. The repeal of the decree, because it had been signed with the stamp of the king, he had basically sold the Jews to Haman, and maybe the king would be unwilling to repeal the decree. Um, So basically what she wanted to do, she wanted Haman to be present when she's asking the king. Because if the king says, what's the king going to say? The king might say, listen, it's not in my ballpark. I gave the ring to Haman. I would love to help you, but I gave the ring to Haman. I essentially sold the Jews to Haman. It's in his ballpark. It's in his court. And I can't do anything. So Haman will have to be there that she could perhaps persuade Haman at the Mishnah. Maybe she'll be able to persuade Haman to... She's not going to be able to persuade him to take back and retract the whole thing, but maybe to diminish
dilute it.
Instead of killing everybody, maybe sell us for slaves. Something like that. Dilute the effect of it. So that's what she wants Haman to be there. What is she showing when she... This is a very interesting point. By inviting Haman, the most obvious thing is she's flattering him, right? That's what he comes later. He comes and tells his wife and his family and all his loved ones, look, I'm the only one who Esther invited to the party. Look how chashuv I am. That's one thing that she's doing. She's trying to flatter him, to butter him up so that he'll be more willing to agree to her. But also what she's showing that he is really essentially subservient to her. Because what happens? She says, I want Haman to be at the party. The Melech says, Ma'aru is Haman. Hurry Haman, get him over here. Do whatever he's doing, get him over here. Haman only saw the covet that he's being accorded. He only saw the honor, the respect that he's getting, the esteem. He didn't see that the other thing that she was hinting to was that you gotta do what I say, I'm the queen. If I say you come to the party, you gotta come to the party. And she was kind of sending the message that when it comes to the party, we're gonna get down to brass tacks and we're gonna haggle about this, and that's what she was hinting, which is a novel pshat. And the reason that and the fact that he only saw the covet, he only saw the respect that he was getting, the honor. That's kind of what led to his downfall. Because then afterwards he sees Mordechai not bowing down to him, as we see, and he gets so angry. And that's what led to his downfall. So we'll continue next time.